You may know that we have three daughters, and when they were young, they watched some show that gave them the idea that they really needed to have a white, fluffy dog. We had two dachshunds. Neither were white, neither were fluffy. But they kept saying, "Mom, we need a white, fluffy dog." And one day, I got an email from one of my daughter's teachers that she had sent to the whole class saying, "A white, fluffy dog has showed up in my garage." So I immediately called her and said, "I need to come get the white, fluffy dog." So I took our middle child, Sloane, with me, and we went on a reconnaissance mission. And we went, and the dog was in her garage. White is not exactly the word I would use to describe this dog. Muddy, for sure. Matted beyond belief. Full of bugs and critters, absolutely. You could barely see eyes because his hair was so overgrown, and he had a giant underbite that stuck out. We loved him. So we took him home, and we bathed him, and we tried to comb him out. We pushed the hair back from his eyes, and we loved him, and we named him Freeman. And then that night, we put Freeman outside. We had a lovely fenced backyard. We put Freeman outside in the yard to do the business. And Freeman didn't come in. The other dogs came in. Like, "Where is Freeman?" We asked the dogs, "Where is Freeman?" "I don't know," they said. So we went looking for Freeman. We took flashlight and we looked. And Freeman's curled up under our slide. We had the play set with the slide. He's under the bottom of the slide, curled up in a tiny little ball. So we picked him up and we brought him in and we put him in the comfy bed with the blankets. The next night, same thing. "Dogs, where is Freeman?" "Oh, no." So we go out with the flashlight, and he's under a bush, curled up in a teeny tiny ball. We brought him in. We put him in the bed with the fluffy blankets. Night after night after night, Freeman went outside and curled up because he'd been a dog on the streets. He'd been afraid. Night is the most vulnerable time. He was scared at night. He'd never had any protection. He'd never had any love. He didn't know what was going to happen to him. And so he would curl up in the smallest way possible in the safest place he could find to hunker down for the night. Freeman didn't yet know he was loved. He didn't yet know he was home. It's sort of the same for the disciples, right? They don't yet know that resurrection is real and that they're living in a resurrected world. So our poor disciples are in a room locked away for good reason. They are scared. They are traumatized. They have just watched the one they thought was going to save them from all of the trauma of the world be beaten and crucified. I would have locked up too. They could have been next. So they lock the door, they hunker down, they find the safest space they can find, and they hunker in to try to be safe. They curl up inside themselves. But then Jesus shows up. Jesus shows up to show them the resurrection. He brings peace into a scary, scary environment. He tells them he loves them. He breathes upon them. He breathes that breath of life, that ruach, that very same breath that flowed over the waters when heaven and earth were created. He breathes it into them so that they have an incarnate reminder of the truth that they are loved. And he sends them. He says, "I love you, and so you must go and love others." This isn't a world in which you can hunker down under the tree or the bush or locked behind a doors. This is a world where resurrection is real, and you must go and share that love with the world. And so they do. They run out, and they start telling people, and poor Thomas had maybe been sent out for a run for beverages or some extra pita bread. Whatever he had been sent to do, he wasn't there when Jesus showed up. I mean, I feel for him. Poor Thomas was left out of the fun. And so Thomas says, "But I want to do it too." How many times have we said that? "But I want to do it too. That sounds like fun." Poor Thomas has FOMO. And it's not about doubt, I don't think. I think it's about the fact that Thomas loved Jesus just as much as the rest of the disciples did. Thomas wanted the same experience the rest of the disciples had had. He wanted to touch. He wanted to know he was loved. He wanted to firm up that relationship that was dear to him. And so Jesus shows up again. He shows up so that Thomas can have the very same experience. He could have chastised Thomas. He could have said, "Why did you ask to see me?" He didn't. He showed up and went straight to him. He didn't show up and say, "Hey, everybody." He showed up and said, "Hey, Thomas, touch me. Know that I am real." And he shows Thomas his wounds. That's really important. He could have just showed up in all his resplendent glory and said, "Touch me, touch my feet, know that I am here." But he lets him touch his wounds. Because in our woundedness, we are healed. In our woundedness, resurrection shows up. In our very scariest, most painful places, the resurrected Christ shows up. Resurrection happens in the pain. And so he asked Thomas to touch his hands and his side. And Thomas gets the very same experience. And then he sends them out to do the work he has given them to do, as we hear in our liturgy over and over and over again. And so we are told to be sent too, right? The gift of Easter is that we don't have to have all the answers. We don't need to know what is going to happen. We don't even have to be healed or whole. We can come perfectly afraid, and Jesus shows up. Whatever we bring, Jesus shows up again and again and again. And today, we have 8 young people who are saying they want to see Jesus. They want to proclaim that Jesus is real, just as the disciples were asked to do. We have 8 young people who will stand up here before you, not with locked doors, but with open arms, to say that Jesus is risen, that Jesus is Lord. They're standing up here to know that they are loved. We get to love them, and they get to know that Jesus loves them. And because they are choosing to do this, because they are showing their bravery in standing in front of everybody, we too get to renew our baptismal vows. We get to say that we believe that Jesus is risen, and that that means that we are deeply loved, that the resurrection is real and incarnate for us, just as it was real and incarnate for the disciples and Thomas when Jesus stood in front of them. And then we get to say what we will do with that belief, that we will be sent forth from this place, that we will go and proclaim the love of Christ to this world that desperately needs to hear it, that we will go and respect the dignity of every human being. We will go to find those who are curled up in the bushes and on the street corners, those who are still locked away and scared, those that nobody else will show love to. We will go find them. We will seek Christ in them, and we will share Christ with them, and we will love them as Christ first loved us. That's what we will say. We will say we will do those things. And then Jesus will send us like he sent the disciples to do those things. So whether, like Freeman, you're still a little afraid, you still curl up inside yourself, literally or metaphorically, whether, like the disciples, you lock your doors to keep away the things that scare you, Jesus will continue to show up because you are just as beloved as the disciples. You are just as beloved as Thomas. Jesus will show up again and again and again and again until you get it, until it's buried in your bones, until it soaks into your marrow that you are beloved of God, that you are home, that resurrection is real. And when you know that, you will flourish, you will blossom, and then you will be sent to share this love with the world, because Easter is our gift to share to a world that desperately needs it, that love is real, and that pain is temporary, and that love conquers all.